10 WDTW, continuous traffic watch.
Watching a new accident on 275 southbound at the M1496 exit that has your right shoulder blocked and is causing heavy traffic from 9 Mile. Also, we're still watching an accident that has your right shoulder blocked on 275 southbound just before the M1496 exit. And we got debris in the left lane on 696 westbound just after 75, so use some caution in that area. That's your total traffic update. I'm Chris Boyd.
1310 WDTW, Motor City Weather.
Today is going to be mostly sunny and 80 degrees with a chance of showers this morning. Tonight, it's going to drop down to 50. Tomorrow, mostly sunny and 74 degrees, and it's currently 71 degrees outside. This is Anthony with your first shift weather.
Do you have some previous experience in the restaurant industry but want additional opportunities to enhance your skills?
The Restaurant Opportunity Center of Michigan, Rock, Michigan, is offering free classes in fine dining, serving, and bartending.
You'll learn the order of service every server should know,
feed pouring,
drink recipes,
customer service skills the industry is looking for,
and much more.
All classes will take place at our restaurant and training center, Colors Detroit, at 311 East Grand River in Detroit, Michigan.
Please call 313-962-5020.
Monday through Friday from 9:30 a.m. until 6 p.m. to set up your orientation date and learn more about the nation's largest nonprofit restaurant worker organization. We want to help you elevate your skill set and passion for the food service industry and give you every opportunity to achieve everything this industry has for you. Again, call 313-962-5020 and set up your appointment for your orientation date. Rock, Michigan.
Your future is waiting for you now.
Stay tuned for more of First Shift after this on Detroit's Progressive Talk, 1310 WDTW.
If you missed today's First Shift with Tony Trupiano, or you want to listen to his segment again, visit our podcast page on 1310WDTW.com today.
Next time you need to stop for groceries, the 42,000 members of the United Food and Commercial Workers in Michigan ask you to shop at one of the stores where they work, including Kroger, Meijer, Hiller's, and Hollywood Markets. Shopping at these union stores helps support good union jobs, which build healthy communities. If you already shop at these stores, our members want to thank you for your support.
First Shift with Tony Trupiano.
Professor Ian Robinson, I want to welcome you to First Shift.
We haven't seen anything like this since the American Association of University Professors way back in the day formed in order to, you know, articulate and defend the idea of academic freedom. Because back in those times, if professors, faculty tried to teach courses that seriously address the interests of what we would nowadays call the 99%, they were quite likely to be fired from their university positions because the power of the business community was such that they often sat on the university boards or they had such power in the legislatures that if it was a public university, they could arrange to, through the regents or whatever the governing body of the public university was, to have those folks fired. So we fought for and over the years built up a pretty strong principle of academic freedom. It got violated in the Cold War days, the McCarthy era in the 50s, but since then we haven't seen that kind of effort by legislatures and individual politicians on the right to reach in and actually, you know, changing, violating the principle of academic freedom by reaching into people's syllabus and trying to tell them what they can and can't teach on the penalty of major loss of funding.
On 1310 WDTW.
Stay connected with us. First Shift is on Facebook and Twitter.
Follow us, like us,
love us. At Tony Trupiano on Twitter and add a like to the First Shift with Tony Trupiano page today.
Tweet.
In a blue-collar, get-to-work-and-get-the-job-done kind of state like Michigan, there's only one show that cares about the men and women who put in a hard day's work every day. This is First Shift on 1310 WDTW. Now, back to Tony Trupiano.
22 minutes after 8 o'clock, Chris Mialakis with us. Pleasure to be with all of you this morning. 888-552-3595. We turn our attention now to Chris. The history of collective bargaining. One of the people that I saw did not get a chance to talk to is someone we were talking about during break. A guy by the name of Mike Kerwin. Mike is, I don't know, 80-something years old, has forgotten more than most of us will ever know.
It's true.
Is just the nicest labor guy you'd ever want to meet. And every time somebody wants to have an impactful discussion on collective bargaining and the history thereof, they call Mike. Funny thing is, he turned to you, Chris Mihalakis.
Yeah, which I thought was very counterintuitive. And I was like, Mike, why are you asking me?
Oh, I don't think you're totally being fair to your intelligence base, but I'll let it go.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, he was there for a lot of this. I mean, and then if you ever get a chance, Tony, Mike has this friend named Carl Reinstead, too, who's a few years older. And Carl,
I can't imagine.
Yeah. And Carl was telling us that he remembered the passage of the Wagner Act.
Wow.
He had just started working in the plants in 1938, which was 3 years after the Wagner Act passed, which was the law that gave us, that protected collective bargaining through rule of law. And so, and that's kind of the beginning of our discussion here. Before the passage, I shouldn't say the passage of the Wagner Act. The Wagner Act passed in 35. 1938, it was upheld by the courts, and that's when you saw collective bargaining, really, take shape as we see it today. Before 35, the only way you could really enforce a collective bargaining agreement is by walking off the job. So, unions had to, were constantly striking their employees. On a regular basis, you would come to an agreement with management. If management broke it, you know, even if it was over a grievance or an interpretation of some sort of agreement, the workers would just, you know, they would strike spontaneously. Because those contracts were not protected by the rule of law. There was no arbitration process in place yet. And so you had this very volatile work environment. And a lot of times what would happen is judges and courts would issue injunctions forcing people to go back to work, which really weakened the power of these agreements and these relationships with management. As we all know, you know, politicians are easily swayed.
No.
Yeah. Imagine that, eh? So finally, you know, because of the volatility in the labor market then in an industry, Congress decided to act and they passed the National Labor Relations Act or the Wagner Act, which basically said that, you know, if you have a collective bargaining in place, then the government, you know, sees that. I mean, that is binding laws. And so from there came arbitration to settle disputes and to stop a lot of these strikes and to bring more peace into the workplace.
Even people, Chris, that I think are anti-union, if you will, understand the importance of our history with regard to collective bargaining. And many would say, hey, listen, there, and you've heard it, I've heard it, on this show, I've heard it when I go to speak in public, and people say, listen, yeah, there was a time and place, and so they did all this. I mean, we were fortunate enough that all this stuff is now in place, so those days are done. All right? Now, we're going to continue to have a conversation about the history of collective bargaining and the importance of that, but how do we respond to this idea that, well, we've actually accomplished everything we needed to?
Well, you know, I don't think workers today in this country have it too good. I don't think, you know, your typical rank and file employee of any union gets paid too much and has too many benefits and too many protections in the workplace. In fact, I think it's the exact opposite. You know, we still have at-will employment in virtually in most states. Most employees can be fired from their jobs at any point, any time. They don't have the job security that those with union contracts do. Wage growth is very stagnant. If you're listening to this show, chances are you don't make as much money as you deserve. Even you conservatives that like to call and complain, I'm sure you're as equally underpaid as, you know, the liberals next to you in the workplace. And so, you know, you see these Republican tricks and talking points that imply that the problem with our economy is that workers have it too good and make too much money. And I don't think that's the case. And it's a direct result as of the decline of the labor movement. As unions become weaker, as collective bargaining becomes more scarce, as collective bargaining agreements become non-existent in most work sites, the middle class suffers, wages drop, insurance costs go up. I mean, everybody loses except for the very, 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 very rich.
In your opinion, and I realize you're not an attorney, and so this may be a legal question, and you may not be comfortable answering it, but I'll throw the question out nonetheless. In your opinion, are there pieces of labor law that are ignored today, that are in place but are not honored any longer?
Yeah, so you know, the Wagner Act passed in 1935, and you have the National Labor Relations Board, which enforces the National Labor Relations Act, right? Well, nowadays, if we're organizing a work site and you sign a card, Tony, that says you want to join the union. Let's say you work at, you know, a non-union drugstore, like one of the very few non-union Rite Aids or a Walgreens or something, and you say you want to join the union. So the employer can fire you. You're an at-will employee. You can be fired for one, and they can even say, we're firing you because you're joining the union. Usually they don't say that when they're firing union sympathizers. They'll target all the union sympathizers. They'll fire them, but they'll say, we're firing you because you're at will. You have to prove, then, in order to enforce the National Labor Relations Act, you have to prove that the reason why they were fired is because they were union sympathizers. And the worst case scenario, if a company is breaking this federal law, if they're firing people only because they want to be part of a union, the worst thing they have to do is pay any lost wages and benefits.
Right.
And that's it. There's no penalty. There's all the incentives in the world to fire all the folks that want a union in your shop, because at the end of the day, you don't lose anything. You pay the wages and the benefits you would have paid them anyways.
Well, which is true. I mean, that's part of the insanity of that whole scenario. It fascinates me, especially when more on Facebook. We don't get as much on the show, people calling the show, and I understand why we don't, because it's very easy to dismantle their arguments when mm-hmm. they call and say, and of course, if Mark in Birmingham's listening, we're ready for you this morning, pal, so feel free. But the reality is, he'll call and say, well, you guys are always talking about the joys of collective bargaining. Yet every time I ask him, give me one problem of collective bargaining, he can't give me one problem of collective bargaining. So as we take a look, again, keeping in mind in context of history, the historical significance of collective bargaining, and why we need to continue to uphold it and to practice it, and more importantly, to practice it. It may be the only, in my opinion, it may be the only thing that keeps our workplace civilized at this point.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. To get rid of collective bargaining is to go back to a time when strikes were the best way to enforce workplace standards of safety, of health and benefits, and those sorts of things. And one last thing I want to say, Tony, public sector collective bargaining didn't come around until 1965. So collective bargaining in the marketplace, in the labor market, is relatively a very new thing. I mean, the fact that I'm giving this presentation in a meeting where there's a gentleman who can remember the first time he had a collective bargaining agreement at General Motors tells us that, you know, this is a relatively new institution, at least in terms of being honored and respected by our government.
And there's still more work to be done, and there's still fine-tuning to be done, and we still need to take a look at what happens around us and say, okay, how do we make this, how do we tweak it, make it better? Okay, we got to get to the break. I'm sorry, folks. We'll be right back.
WDTW, continuous traffic watch.
Watching a new accident on 275 southbound at the M1496 exit that has your right shoulder block and is causing heavy traffic from 9 Mile. Also, we're still watching an accident that has your right shoulder blocked on 275 southbound just before the M1496 exit. And we got debris in the left lane on 696 westbound just after 75, so use some caution in that area. That's your total traffic update. I'm Chris Boyd.
1310 WDTW Motor City Weather.
Today's going to be mostly sunny and 80 degrees with a chance of showers this morning. Tonight, it's going to drop down to 50. Tomorrow, mostly sunny and 74 degrees, and it's currently 71 degrees outside. This is Anthony with your First Shift Weather.
Next time you need to stop for groceries, the 42,000 members of the United Food and Commercial Workers in Michigan ask you to shop at one of the stores where they work, including Kroger, Meijer, Hiller's, and Hollywood Markets. Shopping at these union stores helps support good union jobs, which build healthy communities. If you already shop at these stores, our members want to thank you for your support.
Recently on First Shift.
Let's welcome Will in Milford.
I think this is a perfect example of what politics have put us in this country. Here we are, citizens, working every day, and there's these splinter issues that get us to arguing amongst each other when those above us who don't feel our pain are more or less in control of all the switches. Because we see teachers and they're in our community, and it's easy for us to make these opinions. While these other individuals, the rich, have already seceded from the nation, they live in gated communities, they go to private schools, they've already moved away from us.
First Shift with Tony Triano
on 1310 WDTW. our national leader's rationale for investing so much in that awful 11-year war in Afghanistan was that by slogging through it, we would leave behind a stable, popular government to assure peace and prosperity for all. So, now that America has begun withdrawing from Afghanistan, what are we actually leaving behind? Answer: a despised, rampantly corrupt oligarchy that is, as one Afghan businessman calls it, an illegitimate and irresponsible government. To put faces to it, look no further than the family of Hamid Karzai, the incompetent, impossibly vain, and dishonest president of Afghanistan. His brothers, for example, have amassed astonishing fortunes during his tenure from insider deals, narcotics trafficking, and siphoning off untold millions of U.S. dollars that were supposed to build a stable government. Despite their stashes of ill-gotten wealth, however, the brothers Karzai are not much of a brotherhood, for they're roiled with jealousies, business rivalries, and murderous intrigues. For example, Mahmoud Karzai was developing a massive private housing project on 10,000 acres of land said to have been seized from the government when brother Shah Wali Karzai suddenly pulled off his own seizure. Early this year, he secretly transferred $55 million from Mahmoud's corporation to one of his own. Meanwhile, another very rich brother, Ahmed Wali Karzai, was killed last year, resulting in one of his aides being imprisoned, though he's still not been charged with any crime. The aide is not being held by regular authorities, but by the personal security guards of Shah Wali, who seems to think the aide knows where Ahmed's fortune is stashed. This is Jim Hightower saying, our country sacrificed lives, treasury, and moral standing for this? America's leaders of the past decade owe us, especially our troops, an abject apology.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
If you missed today's First Shift with Tony Trupiano, or you want to listen to a segment again, visit our podcast page on 1310wdtw.com today.
First word.
First thoughts.
First with the news and newsmakers that matter to you.
First Shift on 1310WDTW with Tony Trupiano.
35 minutes after 8 o'clock, Chris Mihalakis in studio with us. He is, of course, the president of the Metro Detroit AFL-CIO. We are going to go to the phones before we continue our discussion. As always, if you'd like to join us, 888-552-3595. Chris, let's welcome Mark and Warren to First Shift. Mark, thanks for giving us a call today. What's on your mind?
Morning, Chris. Tony, thanks for taking my call. I had a question, a bit of a rhetorical question. I think I pretty much know, but I got into a debate about due process with a gentleman at the golf course a couple weeks ago, and I was trying to explain to him, he's a Ford worker, he's on the management side, and I tried to explain to him that the reason that, you know, he has due process is a lot of the battles that the union fought, and he was telling me, no. So, he challenged my thinking. I accepted his challenge, and I told him, well, you know what? Let me do some more research, make sure that I'm on point with my debate and so forth. So I just wanted a little bit of clarity. Chris, I want, you know, you're pretty astute on the subject matter, and if possible, maybe give me a little history lesson on due process and its effects not only on the union worker, but the other employees that benefit from it, especially in the big three.
Yeah, no, that's... I'm glad you asked the question. In fact, months ago, one of the first times I was on Tony's show, we did a whole segment on due process, but it's always it's something we should revisit on a regular basis because, you know, people don't realize the biggest benefit a union gives you right off the bat in your very first contract is this guarantee of due process. And what that does is, you know, Michigan is an at-will employment state. Most states are at-will employment states. And even if you're not an at-will employment state, it's very easy to be fired. And what that means is you can be fired anytime for any reason unless you're a protected class. You can't fire someone for being black or Italian or Protestant or whatever. But you have to prove that. And that's very, very – that doesn't mean you cannot fire black, Italian, or Protestant people. It just means that can't be the reason why you fire them. In fact, you can just say, I'm firing you for no reason. You're out of here. See you later. And so.
And that's completely legal.
Right. Completely legal. And so if you're wearing a red shirt and I'm upset at, you know, Ohio State and they wear red, I can say, you know what, everyone with a red shirt is fired today. And it's completely legal, totally okay in the eyes of our government. So the only way, the only institution that gives you due process at the workplace is a collective bargaining agreement. Without a collective bargaining agreement, you have no way to, you have no laws that protect you, that give you any sort of due process. But collective bargaining implements it because it's an agreement between the workers and management that says that every worker is entitled to due process. And when there's a disagreement, there's an arbitration process. There's a grievance procedure and an arbitration process if the grievance procedure fails. So
now you use the, you said every worker, which would include and not be limited to union workers as well as management.
Actually, no, it would just be union workers. If a management team or if non-union workers at, say, Ford, if there is a due process procedure, if they have some sort of grievance commission or something like that, it's voluntary. And if they do it, it's because they're afraid that their folks will organize. It, when you have double-breasted companies, when you have, like, you know, engineers and technical staff and that sort of thing, a lot of times they give them the same provisions under the collective bargaining agreement, so they don't go out and seek a collective bargaining agreement for themselves.
And that's especially true with the big three, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Especially, like, you know, people that aren't white-collar jobs that are not necessarily management. I mean, those people
they benefit from the battles that we've won, so they don't need it.
Absolutely.
President of our union typically says, you know, that there's a lot of people that are not necessarily union sympathizers, and a lot of that happens to do with the fact that they've never needed the union. Until you need it, you know, it's like car insurance, you know?
Yeah.
You can't stand paying it until you need it.
Mark,
I just want to make one point. I'm sorry.
That's fine. I got another caller waiting, but go ahead.
Well, you know, I was out getting petitions signed on Saturday, and I came across
a
professor. Yeah, and thank you. And his big beef was that they can't fire those teachers. And you know, I tried to explain to him that if management did their job and observed teachers and they need to get rid of them, there is due process for doing so. Tony, thanks for taking my call. Chris, thank you a ton for the information.
Thank you, Mark. Have a great week, gentlemen.
Absolutely, Mark. And thank you so much.
And Mark's absolutely right about that. I've conducted grievance meetings. I've had, you know, members when I was a business agent get fired. And I've seen good managers and I've seen bad managers. And a good manager, even a halfway competent manager, if an employee is goofing off, if an employee isn't playing by the rules, as long as you do the homework and just look into it a little bit, take the 5 minutes it takes to find the proof that this employee deserves to be fired, you know, you won't have any problems. Bad teachers, any bad employee in a unionized environment can be fired. You just have to take the time, give them the respect they deserve to prove that they need to be fired.
You know, and before I get to the call, I always go back to the story, which I've repeated many times. And years ago, I was in Kevin Moore's office, who was the president of Teamsters Local 299, and he had gone to bat for an employee at one of his companies more than once. And so he calls this young man on the phone, and he says, hey listen, this guy calls him, and he says, you know, it's not a good time for me to talk, is what Kevin says to this guy. I've got somebody in my office, and the guy says, I don't care who's in your office. I need to get this resolved. I don't want to lose my job. So Kevin said, fine. All right, fine. That's fine. I just need you to answer one question. Did you do this? Did you do what they said you did? He goes, yeah. He says, then you're fired, dude. I'm not going to go in there and stand up for you yet again after you had promised me the last time that you would straighten things out. So this idea that, you know, we don't care about bad employees is just not true, Chris.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, very quickly, let's go to Ken and Warren. Ken, as always, a pleasure to talk to you, and you're on the air with Chris Mihalakis.
Tony, Chris, okay, I'm going to give you a little bit of a contrary, though, about union due process. You can also be sacrificed by your union, whether you're didn't do anything wrong, bad, or illegal at all. If the union can make a deal down the line, and this is part of Michigan labor law, because I'm a victim of it, if the union can benefit by selling you out, they will.
Yeah, but here's the problem. Ken, thanks for the call. The problem, I've talked to Ken privately. The problem with that is that Ken can't remove himself from what happened. He doesn't look at this objectively, and I'm not going to let him sit here and give us the history of what happened. Listen, he was harmed, but it had nothing to do with his union.
Well, here's the thing about that. A union has a moral but also a legal obligation to handle all the grievances of every one of its members. If you file a grievance, that grievance has to go through an objective process. The way it works, Tony, is that there's multiple steps in the grievance. You'll have a shop steward meet with the first line manager. Eventually, you'll have representatives from the union meeting with the upper level manager, with HR directors, that sort of thing. And if no one can come to a resolution, the board of the union decides whether or not a grievance has enough merit to go to arbitration. Sometimes, a lot of times, boards will not vote to arbitrate because if they lose the arbitration, it could set bad precedents in the future and it can put employees in a worse situation than they were in to begin with. Now, the National Labor Relations Act oversees unions and make sure that they are representing all of their members equally. If there is a case where a worker or a member doesn't get the fair treatment they deserve, then the union gets penalized for it. The union gets in trouble. So, and no union wants to go through that. So there's
no they don't want to go through. I mean, they truly don't.
It tarnishes your reputation and it hurts your credibility with your members, and it really hinders your ability to grow and to organize new members. So, I mean, you know, workers are protected, they're protected by their unions, and they're also protected from any potential issues that...
I don't think people understand the dynamic of the relationship between the negotiator and the management.
Right.
They don't understand that there's a relationship there, and it's generally a good relationship. That's the part they don't comprehend. I don't know why it's always got to be adversarial, because it's not always... In fact, more times than not, it's not adversarial.
And, you know, let me bring something else up, Tony. You see Republicans attacking the treasuries of unions left and right, especially in the public sector. Part of the reason why they do that, or actually the reason why they do that, is because going to arbitration costs money. You have to pay the arbitrator, it's usually $10,000, and you have to pay your attorney. And if you lose an arbitration, if you can't put up the money to pay your attorney to defend your case, then you can set very dangerous precedents in your workplace that could be very harmful for all your workers. And so when Republicans attack the treasuries of unions in the way that they're doing, the workers hurt in the end because they lose their ability to enforce their contract and enforce those work rules.
Yeah. See, this is so much deeper than people realize. I'm so glad we're having this conversation. And obviously it's resonating. We've got another call, but we're going to have to wait till after the break to get to it. So, Kelly, stay where you're at, and I promise you'll be first up after the break. Who would have thought? Who would have thought? You know, it's interesting because every time we have one of these discussions, it really does. And in fact, the last time that we had John, I ended up forwarding your email address to a half a dozen people. I know you got emails. In fact, you got one today because I gave somebody the wrong address originally. So, you seem to be resonating with people. Let's take a quick break here. Chris Mialakis again, president of the Metro Detroit AFL-CIO. Folks, this isn't just about protecting your jobs. It's not just about unions. It's really about living in a fair and just society. If you don't understand that, if you can't comprehend that, then you're really looking at this the wrong way. And I'm serious. I'll tell you what somebody said to me yesterday. Sometimes you just need to take a deep breath without inhaling. I'll let you think about that, and we'll come back and finish it up on the other side. Kelly, stay where you're at. You're next. 888-552-3595. I'm Tony Trupiano. We'll be back on 1310 WDT.
Want your business to be heard on the go with our listeners? Advertise on iHeartRadio, the fastest-growing radio app, voted best radio app of 2012. If you want to stand out and be heard by your future customers and our most loyal listeners, then email iHeartDetroit@clearchannel.com.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her. Okay, but how?
Just... I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
I go to school with your children. We say the Pledge of Allegiance together. I'm one out of every four children in America. And I'm struggling with hunger. I'm lucky to grow up where I could be whatever I want. I want to grow up and be someone who doesn't go to bed hungry. Please visit feedingamerica.org today and find your local food bank. Every dollar you donate helps provide 7 meals for kids like me. Together, we're Feeding America. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
I started using drugs and alcohol when I was about 12 years old. I was bored and I thought drugs would be exciting.
I stopped doing drugs because I was shy. I wanted to fit in.
I thought using drugs was a good way of dealing with stress.
My parents must have told me a million times, don't do drugs, you know, they'll ruin your life. Now I know what they all meant.
People often begin using drugs as a solution to a problem. Eventually, the drug use itself becomes a much greater problem. Call Narcanon Arrowhead today at 1-800-468-6933.
Shocking news in the world of heavy metal. One of the hardest bands on the planet is about to release a children's record. Songs slated to appear on the album include A Tisket a Tasket, Hey Diddle Diddle, and The Hokey Pokey. Let's listen to a sneak preview. Here's Ring Around the Rosie, performed by the one and only...
Please deposit 25 cents for the next 3 minutes.
Radio. You shouldn't have to pay for it. This message brought to you by America's 13,000 local radio stations who believe some things were just meant to be free.
I'm in the car next to you on the highway. I sit in front of you on the bus. I'm one out of every six Americans, and I'm struggling with hunger. This isn't an uncontrollable epidemic. There's enough food in this country to feed every hungry person. Please, visit feedingamerica.org today and find your local food bank. Every dollar you donate helps provide 7 meals for those around you, quietly struggling with hunger. Together, we're Feeding America.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Are drugs affecting your family or a friend? Call Narcanon at 1-800-468-6933. Narcanon provides free assessment and referral services. Call Narcanon at 1-800-468-6933 or visit our website at stopaddiction.com.
Born for greatness.
First Shift with Tony Trupiano on Facebook. And also follow us
at Tony Trupiano on Twitter.
You're listening to Michigan's only live and local progressive talk radio show.
Give us a call.
1-888-552-3595.
Welcome back to First Shift.
With Tony Trupiano.
10 minutes before the top of the hour, and it's been a busy hour. Chris Mialakis again, my guest. He is with us every Tuesday at this time. We are talking about collective bargaining. We are going to go back to the phones. If you'd like to join us, 888-552-3595. Kelly in Redford joins us now. Chris, Kelly, welcome to First Shift. What's on your mind today?
No laws that protected workers at all, other than the National Labor Relations Act. I just wanted to take a little umbrage with that. Public sector employees, except for school teachers for some odd reason, have always been, at least since the 1880s, have always had civil service protection. And the thing about civil service was, the nice thing about that was, it wasn't how you got in the door, it's not how you got out the door, it's about how you also got in the door. And, you know, you had hiring by qualification. And I just think that, you know, and I used to be a civil service commissioner, and I got paid the august salary of $25 a meeting. The nice thing about having a union was that, you know, the guy who was doing that was getting the union or the civil service grievance, the nice thing about having the union there was the union would show up with a lawyer for him. You know, most people couldn't hire the lawyers that we would hire, the township would hire, you know, on the other side. So the nice thing about that, about having a union, was that that guy was actually represented well in front of a civil service commission.
Which is only fair.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm saying that was a good thing.
Yes, I know you are.
Yeah. You know, but I, you know, there are other laws that protect at least public workers.
Yeah, public employees are kind of a different animal.
Thanks for your call, Kelly. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, and Kelly's right. I mean, there are civil service laws to protect people from being victims of political hirings and political firings. And I don't know when those went into effect, and I'm sure it varies based on the level of government, whether it's municipal, state, or federal. But public sector collective bargaining was not in place until 1965, in the state of Michigan anyways, and in federal 1968. And you know which governor it was that signed in PARA?
I want to say Romney.
Romney.
Yeah.
Yep.
Let me ask you, this past weekend, Mitch Daniels, the governor of Indiana, basically said that public sector unions are antiquated and we no longer need them. In fact, when they got rid of them in Indiana, that's when things got good. But before he said that, Chris, he also said that because of collective bargaining, they saved a boatload of money in Indiana. So he can't have it both ways, can he?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, one thing we got to remember is you need a strong public sector. I'm not saying let's, you know, nationalize all of our industries or anything like that. But when you have a strong public sector in your economy, that is a group of workers that will not get laid. Traditionally, the argument is you have workers that won't get laid off in the recession. So if manufacturing workers are getting laid off, your public employees, your teachers, your municipal workers, your police, your firefighters, they're still going to the grocery store. They're still giving money to the dry cleaners. They're still, you know, shopping at the local markets and keeping your local businesses afloat while, you know, manufacturing workers or whatever industries hit at the time are hurting. And so, a big reason why we have this prolonged recession that's been going on for years is because, for the first time, I think ever, or at least in a very long time, we've made the conscious decision to go after public employees while the economy is slumping. When traditionally, you know, you would do the opposite. And so, you know, as far as what Governor Daniels is saying, I mean, that's just, it's ludicrous. I think collective bargaining benefits taxpayers because it forces governments to be more efficient with their management and with their oversight, but it also protects workers from graft. It protects workers from discrimination at the workplace.
All right, let's take one more call. We're just about out of time. I want to welcome Peter in Ypsilanti. And Peter, thank you so much for giving us a call this morning. You're on the air with Chris Mihalakis.
Hey, good morning, Tony. I have a quick comment, and then I'd like to get your reaction to it. I'm a big supporter of unions and collective bargaining, and my comment is you see a lot on the right and also on television about members who are misbehaving severely, and they always claim that, well, the union just gets them back on the job. They it's just a revolving door. We can't get rid of bad employees. And it's really bad PR for unions.
It is. But you know what, Peter? You're right. It is bad PR, and I know exactly. And thank you for the call. I think it's an important, and unfortunately we don't have a lot of time, but I think we do need to have that conversation.
Well, here's the thing. It's bad PR, but it's also, but it's untrue. I mean, you can't, you know, how do you protect yourself from the labor movement standpoint from a lie? You know, any halfway competent manager can fire bad employees. If workers are showing up drunk or not doing their job or showing up an hour late, I mean, you know, these are all things. I've been a business agent. I've been in those meetings where I have a legal and moral responsibility to try to get my worker back to work. If the business agent on the side of the union is working harder than the manager, then yeah, sometimes, you know, people are going to get back to work that maybe shouldn't, because management was asleep at the wheel. But, you know, you can't blame the union for being good at their job and blame the union for management being lousy. I mean, that's just very counterintuitive. And, you know, but a lot of times those stories get fabricated or exaggerated, and there's nothing we can do about
it. The media has been the biggest detriment to these issues.
Well, I mean, the media has workers that are represented by unions that take away from their, from their management's profits. So, of course, they don't like collective bargaining.
Well, it's it does get a little frustrating, and I completely understand where Peter's coming from, and I want to thank him for the call because, again, it's a conversation that we just we actually need to discuss it a little more when we have more time. Let me just quickly, I got a couple quick announcements, actually one quick announcement to make. The Oakland County Democratic Party has their monthly meeting tonight, and they're meeting in Troy this month at the Troy Community Center to try to make it a little more inviting for Oakland County Democrats. And so instead of just meeting in Pontiac all the time, they're going to start moving the meeting around. They asked if I would announce that today they're going to be this evening, 7 o'clock, at the Troy Community Center in room 305. So, folks, if you are so inclined, go check it out. Chris, I want to thank you for being with us. Appreciate you taking the time. It was a great conversation today. I mean, really was a great conversation. Not that it surprises me. It's just a great conversation, and I'm really pleased that it resonated with people, and I really actually think we helped some folks today.
Well, it's funny because whenever I bring stuff up like this, I'm always like, I don't know, Tony, is this too wonky? Is this?
And
is
I it, always say, do you what?
You say, no, let's have that conversation. Yeah, and I'm like, I don't know. And then it turns out working out.
It was the right conversation to have. All right, thank you again. We'll look forward to visiting with you again next Tuesday. And, folks, that is really going to clean it up for us today. What an amazing day. I, again, will be back on this blessed station at noon, noon to 3 o'clock, as I guest host my last installment of the Ed Schultz Show in this incarnation. I'm sure it'll have me back. But for now, if you need 3 more hours of me, and can't imagine why you would, but God bless those of you that have been so supportive of me. I do appreciate that. I will be back at noon. In the meantime, I want to thank Anthony and Jeff for all their hard work, and of course you for being there for me, period. Folks, have a great day, and as always, I ask that you be well.
WDTW, continuous traffic watch.
We still have that accident on 275 southbound at the M1496 split that's causing problems. Has your right shoulder blocked, and it's causing heavy traffic from 8 Mile Road. Also on 96 eastbound, just before Beck, you got an accident that has your left shoulder blocked, and it has heavy traffic from Milford Road. And you got a stalled vehicle that's blocking the right lane on the Lodge northbound, just before Wyoming. That's your total traffic update. I'm Chris Boyd.
1310 WDTW Motor City Weather.
Today's going to be mostly sunny and 80 degrees with a chance of showers this morning. Tonight, it's going to drop down to 50. Tomorrow, mostly sunny and 74 degrees, and it's currently 71 degrees outside. This is Anthony with your first shift weather.
If you missed today's first shift with Tony Trupiano, or you want to listen to a segment again, visit our podcast page on 1310WDTW.com today.
This is Detroit's...